Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Stu does America.
The election is heating up. Stay up to date with State of the Race. It's a podcast series from me. Yes, your lovely host, Stu. Host of Stu Does America. And the fun thing is, if you go to wherever you get your podcasts, just click on Stu Does America, follow the show. You'll get not only this podcast, but also State of the Race as we go on through the election season. Be sure to check that out. Also, you can get this very show on YouTube at youtube.com/Stu Does America. Don't miss the Fani Willis Fanny Calls segment that we have posted right now on so stupid, but go check it out anyway. It's a sort of alternate employment for Fannie Willis in case things go awry. Sarah Gonzalez is here to tell us about her confrontation with our Texas Senator John Cornyn. Tensions in Israel continue to ratchet up. We'll go over the latest in Rafah, but we're going to start by doing the 2024 political landscape. And I guess we'll start with the big news of the day, which is the Trump trial. I was on with Megyn Kelly earlier today going through the latest developments. It's insane, okay? It's just a crazy, crazy day. The final statements, defense urges jurors to focus on paperwork as Trump hush money trial nears end. Of course, the whole case is about the paperwork, so that's a rational thing for them to be focusing on. Now that they're going to, they're probably going to talk about the, you know, the porn star and the sex involved, but actually, what they should be focusing on is the paperwork. And to remind you of this, there's 34 charges against Donald Trump in this particular case. In reality, there's one charge against Donald Trump. Now, the charge basically is, hey, you slept with this porn star. You paid Michael Cohen. You paid him off after he paid off this porn star. Then you take that one payment and you divide it into, well, it's really 12 payments because they were monthly. So now it's 12 charges. And it wasn't just the payments, the checks that he signed. It's also the recording of those payments in the ledger of the business as attorney fees and legal expenses. He was paying, of course, an attorney, which kind of seems like a legal expense, but okay. That's another 12 charges. And then the other 10, I think, are the invoices put in by Michael Cohen. Like Michael Cohen submitting what they're calling a fraudulent invoice. That is a crime committed by Donald Trump. That's how they get to 34 charges. So all this is going on. The Biden administration rolled out, I don't know, 80 something year old Robert De Niro, because the best way to push back against accusations that you're too old is to roll out an 80 something year old Robert De Niro, who seemed incoherent as well at his press conference today. And then he had people accusing the Capitol police officer standing behind him of lying to a jury. The only reason we know about that, of course, is Blaze TV's own reporting from Steve Baker, who actually caught Harry Dunn in the lie that they are asking about at the press conference. So the day has not gone particularly well for the Democrats. Of course, they have a judge who is very, very friendly to their cause and is doing everything they can to get a conviction. You still have to expect that they're going to get one, even with all the nonsense in this trial. They didn't do this just, you know, rolling the dice. I think they knew what the outcome would likely be, but it only takes one juror to make this kind of hold up. And what's fascinating about this is, you know, they're running ads in New York now. The Biden administration is running ads. The campaign is running ads in New York to say how bad Donald Trump is. You have a situation where they're rolling out celebrities to try to beg the public to focus more on Donald Trump's legal issues. These are not the actions of a campaign that believes it's winning. This is a campaign that knows things are not going well. And you can talk about Donald Trump selecting someone who worked for Donald Trump, selecting the wrong or an inappropriate selection out of a drop-down menu of a bookkeeping software program. I know that's the big thing that everyone's worried about, right? Like that's if everyone's, you know, everyone in the country is like coming home from work and be like, damn that Donald Trump. That should have been filed under hush money payments, not legal expenses. I know that's on the top of everybody's mind, but let me just give you a a little picture of the landscape that this election is going on under. What are the circumstances that actual real people are dealing with on an everyday basis? Not necessarily, you know, business records at the Trump Organization being the top of their priority list when things like this are happening. Let me just give you a couple examples here. New York City hotel rooms are really expensive right now. Why are they so expensive? The New York Times asked this question, and let me give you some of the evidence. The average daily rate for a hotel stay in New York increased to $301.61 in 2023, up 8.5% from $277.92 in 2022, according to CoStar, a leading provider of commercial real estate data and analysis. During the first 3 months of 2024, when prices traditionally dip, the average stay was still 6.7% higher than during the same period last year, $230, up from $216. Okay, so you'd say, okay, this is the typical inflation, right? You just come out and saying the same inflation stuff. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. That's actually not the cause of this. Now, of course, inflation hasn't helped these prices, but that's not the reason why they're so high right now. They're so high right now because of something else that's going on with the Biden administration, namely the way they've controlled the border. About 135 of the city's roughly 680 hotels entered the shelter program, with many congregated in Midtown Manhattan, Long Island City in Queens, and near Kennedy International Airport, all traditional magnets for tourists. Participating hotels are paid up to $185 a night per room, according to the city. Not a single one has converted back to a traditional hotel. So there was this big supply of hotels, and then Biden let millions of people across the border. A little help from Greg Abbott and a couple of other southern governors, just making sure they can get up there to those areas in New York. And they were so overwhelmed, they just started renting out the hotels for $185 a night. Now, these hotels were like, well, we are not filled every night. We can get guaranteed filled at $185 a night. Let's pull the trigger on this. So they've wiped out a third of the supply in New York City. And all the prices are going up for the people who actually want to travel to New York City. And I would say that number probably going a little lower recently. The use of city hotels for migrants represents a loss of 16,532 hotel rooms, leaving 121,677 for travelers, according to data by CoStar. That's 2,812 fewer hotel rooms than existed in the period just before the pandemic, a shortage that is being acutely felt. About 65,000 migrants are being sheltered in hotels, tent dormitories, and other shelters, in large part because of the city's legal obligation to provide a bed to anyone who needs one. The city projects it will spend $10 billion over three fiscal years on the migrant crisis. And here's a map to give you an idea of where these cities are. Basically, for those on podcasts, they are spread all over the city. So think about this. You have President Biden, who has a failure on the border. You have a southern governor sending some of these people out there. But I mean, it's only like 10 or 20% of the people going up to these areas are responsible, from Greg Abbott and such, sending them up there. So that's the highest profile part of the problem, but not the biggest part of the problem. The biggest part of the problem is just the border security generally. And then add on to that another progressive policy, which is we're going to give a free bed to anyone who needs one. All that combines to hitting the average person. If they want to travel to New York, whether it's on business, if they've got a small business, needs to do business in New York, maybe it's just a person who just wants to go to the city to see a show or go watch a Knicks game, say RIP Knicks season, but it was a good one. Whatever it is, the bottom line is at the end of the day, you have a situation where this is just hitting average people who just want to travel to New York. Okay, that's just one example. Let me give you another one. Why grocery bills feel so high, even though food inflation is technically low. Is it technically low? Well, look at the consumer price index for food at home. The change since January 2021 and the year over year change. Well, the year over year change is kind of low, right? It's not super, super high. Hasn't been the highest place where inflation has hit people over the past year or so. Of course, it had risen so high that it continued a 1.1% increase over a number of people were already pissed off about is just higher than the number they were already pissed off about. And, you know, just because it's not going up that high right now, you know, when you're spending $20 for milk and a package of Nilla wafers, which are delicious, by the way. Oh, got the Nilla wafers in the banana pudding. I mean, it's just fantastic. They're just a good product. And they look like the most boring product in the world, but Nilla wafers are freaking awesome. I stand for them. I love them. I appreciate them. They're awesome. Okay, that's just a side point, but it's also very, very true. But that's why people are freaking out, because their Nilla wafers are so expensive. Everything's really, really expensive. Remember, Biden was also the VP under Obama. And if you remember this going back, they did an entire website that said, what does $40 mean to you? And they meant to show that it was really, really important. It was going to save people $40 a month. It was kind of being mocked at the time. Oh, 40 bucks a month, what does that mean? And they did a whole website saying $40 a month is really important. Well, now it's $40 just for Nilla wafers. Okay? And now I consume a lot of Nilla wafers, to be honest with you. But still, $40 a month is, they have to make the exact opposite argument now. Hey, you go to the grocery store, you're spending $40, $80, $120 a month more. Don't worry about that. It's only up a certain percentage this month. Don't never fear. Everything's going to be okay. Now, what all of this does, all this real world stuff, what it accomplishes for the Biden administration is it puts them in a state of terror, basically. And they're trying to now win the election with low information voters. Eyeing Trump, but on the fence, how tuned out voters could decide 2024. And this goes through an interesting thing, because this has been something that has existed my entire life, as long as I've been aware of politics, where there are people called low information voters. It's sort of an insult, but sort of not. It's actually something at some level to just be admired, something to aspire to be out of the information tidal wave that we get every single day. I kind of understand it and kind of appreciate it in some way. But the low information voter is a person who doesn't follow every in and out of politics. What they know is what's going on in their life, right? They are worried about other things, and when they notice politics, it's usually just to irritate them, something that has blown up their life in some way. Well, Donald Trump is doing particularly well among this voter group, a group that's not particularly engaged with every twist and turn of the trial and its details. Politically disengaged Americans are emerging as one of the most unpredictable, complex, and potentially influential groups of voters in the 2024 race. They are fueling Mr. Trump's current polling leads, but in many cases hail from traditionally Democratic communities, giving Mr. Biden a chance to win some of them back if he can get their attention. And of course, it's hard to get their attention because they're not all that engaged with everyday politics. And of course, the New York Times presents this information as, oh man, this is really tough for Joe Biden. What shall he do? When it was the Democrats winning all of these voters, they didn't mind it all that much. It wasn't a big concern. In fact, they were just, they were just voting with their pocketbooks. Well, now they are seeing something totally different. These communities that were traditionally Democratic communities are moving. And look, they're not moving so much to change the entire political landscape. You know, some of the estimates are, you know, people like Mitt Romney were winning 8% of the Democratic vote among black, or 8% of the black vote compared to the Democrats who were winning, 92%. John McCain only, was winning, 6 to 8% of the Democratic vote in 2008. Trump might get 20%. And that's still 4 out of 5 African-American voters going for Biden. I'm not saying that he's winning all of them, but he is moving the needle. And if Donald Trump wins 20% of the black vote, he's probably going to win the election. I mean, it's going to be really hard. It doesn't guarantee it. He could lose white voters. He could lose suburban women and still wind up losing the vote. But if he gets 20% of the vote, maybe 30%, 40% in some polls of the Latino vote, these are numbers that probably mean he wins the election. As I said before, I'm more skeptical of young voters at this point with this kind of change of heart. I don't have much belief in them holding out and staying away and maybe voting for Trump. I'm less confident in those votes. When it comes to these, some of these racial lines, these are long held. I mean, look, they seem to like Donald Trump. These groups seem to like Donald Trump a little bit more than they like other Republicans. They seem to be moved more by him. And they seem to be moved more by the idea that, look, 2019 is the last time they can remember things being kind of good. You hit 2020, even though Trump was still president in 2020, it's a COVID situation. And of course, Democrats voted for all the policies that a lot of these people disliked. And so that was, of course, continued into the 2021 inauguration of Biden and throughout his term. And so they look at this and they say, well, we've had 4 bad years in a row. The last time I remember things were pretty good was probably 2019. I want that guy back. In fact, I might not even want that guy back. But what I want back is something other than this guy, something other than the new guy. This Biden guy, I don't like how this is going. And they keep saying this in poll after poll after poll. Times also wrote up a story kind of based on this, the shaky foundation of Trump's lead, disengaged voters. And got a couple of helpful charts, do a little chartapalooza here for you today. A voter preference based on non-voters and voters. And what you see here is a fall off among voters that were 2020 voters. In 2020, Joe Biden won those voters by about 4 points. And now they're winning them. He's winning them by 2 points. Things have come down a little bit for Biden, but not by much. You see, the real movement, though, is on non-voters. Non-voters' preference, they were heavily favored to Biden by almost 10 points in 2020. That number has changed in 2022. It was a slight favoring of Donald Trump among these people who didn't wind up voting, and this is important. And that have moved into 2024 to a 14-point margin for Donald Trump among this group. Now, why does it matter if this group is voting for Donald Trump? Because by definition, they are non-voters. Well, when you look at the polls and how they're made up, what you're seeing is people who don't traditionally vote, they're not reliable voters, are heavily favoring Donald Trump. That's part of the reason why he leads in some of these polls, especially among registered voters polls. When you get into likely voters, a lot of times it gets closer because they will eliminate some of those people. In the past, this has benefited Republicans. You'd see a registered voter poll that would be favoring Democrats, and then you'd go look at likely voters, it would move toward Republicans. The opposite is happening right now. These voters who are non-voters, people who did not vote in 2020, are favoring Donald Trump by a ton. The question is, will those people be reliable? Will those people be enough to overwhelm the rest of the electorate and actually lead to a Donald Trump victory? I said this before, I will say it again. This type of coalition can be incredibly beneficial. It can lead to massive landslide victories. It can also be very, very built on a foundation of sand. Because if these voters don't show up, we got massive, massive problems if you're worried about a Republican president. Now, by the way, you can look at some of the splits here as well. People who voted in did not vote in 2020 or 2022. Biden is, these are Democratic voters. 19% of them are looking to Trump. If people who voted in 2022, meaning the most engaged voters, Biden is winning them 92-4. So there is a major, major difference between the level of engagement right now. Trump has been pretty good at activating voters that are not particularly engaged. He's been good at that every single time he's run. Can he pull that off? I think it's very possible. And right now, I would say he's the favorite. At the end of every State of the Race episode, we usually do this thing where we come up with a completely made up metric as to who's winning the election right now. What are the chances of the Trump or Biden winning the election right now? And what do we think they are if you project to November? The November number is much less certain. Like, I think right now, if the election were held today, Donald Trump would win. You know, maybe 65-70% chance he would win. I mean, it wouldn't be a sure thing. The election's still pretty close. Some of these states are within the margin of error. But honestly, I think there'd be a really good chance he would win if the election were held today. It will not be held today. That is a guarantee. It's going to be held in November. And in November, these things can change in a big way. But Donald Trump is ahead right now. This is the best polling position he has been at. This, you know, 3 or 4 month period is the best polling position he's been at, not just in this election, but in any election he's ever run. He is doing better than he did in 2016 when he won. He's doing better than he did in 2020 when he narrowly lost. He is way, I think, right now significantly ahead, and things keep breaking in his favor. You have a situation with these legal matters that we discussed. Look, this case looks, it was always the weakest of the bunch. It looks like it's gone really poorly for the prosecution. He may still get a conviction, but I don't think you're moving many people on this one. The other three, which I think could theoretically move people, are all looking like they're going to be delayed till after the election. So he might skate there and get out of those legal problems completely, which is a massive advantage as to where we thought he was at the beginning of all this. Let me just give you a couple of other quick additions to this. You have these third-party candidates. The RFK one we've talked a lot about. The RFK situation seems to be a slight advantage for Donald Trump. More voters coming from Biden than from Trump. When you add in that third-party candidate, it seems like it moves a little bit towards Biden. Not every single time, but most of the time. Your other third-party candidates, you have Jill Stein, obviously Green Party candidate, got a much more likely pull from Donald Trump. Cornel West, well-known media figure, he's not going to get more than 1 or 2%, but those 2% probably going to come from Joe Biden's side rather than Donald Trump's side. You know, the higher-profile third-party candidates are from the left. Most recent example is this weekend at the Libertarian Convention. There's a battle back and forth. Chase Oliver, who is sort of a left-leaning libertarian, versus Michael Rechtenwald. Now, Rechtenwald's been on our show. Like, he's been on the radio show several times. He's done a Glenn Beck podcast. He's a former professor, kind of the victim of some crazy woke scandal. He is a guy, you know, he's not a conservative. He was a liberal, but he's kind of woken up and has this sort of, I don't know, a Bill Maher type of profile. Something that could appeal to a conservative voter. Well, Rechtenwald wound up losing in the primary to a guy who, you know, was talking about that drag queen story hours actually aren't all that bad and we should be okay with them. Again, another thing moving again. Everything's turning up Trump right now, I guess is what I'm saying. When it comes to the election, things are going very well, and he has to be considered the favorite. And that leads to this headline from Politico: Dems in full-blown freakout over Biden. They believe this is not something where they're like, oh, well, Mitt Romney might be president. This is, you know, Adolf Hitler might be president to these people. They're freaking out. They're losing their mind. And, you know, as you know, I have a substantial bet with Glenn Beck that Joe Biden will be the nominee. He believes it would be, or at least believed that it would be Michelle Obama. Right now, it doesn't look like Michelle will step in. But these stories keep happening like this. The higher and higher propensity we see of these types of stories, the more likely they do pull Joe Biden for somebody at some point. They're looking at him as we're looking at him. He's incapable of this. He's doing poorly. His polling is not improving as we mark as we go on and we see Donald Trump in the news every day. This isn't getting any better for Biden. They've been banking on this for years and years and years and years. And if you're Donald Trump, despite the fact you're sitting in a courtroom every day, you kind of like the position you're in. Sarah Gonzalez joins us next.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Joined now by Sarah Gonzalez. She is, of course, the host of the Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered program right here on Blaze TV. Sarah, thanks so much for coming back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It has been. I wanted to start with, I spent most part of my Memorial Day weekend watching some of the Libertarian convention. And I don't think that says good things about me, per se, but we'll ignore that for a second. To watch this whole play out. Now, first of all, the final round of voting was a both Dan Marino, former Miami Dolphins quarterback, and Courtney Love both got a vote to be the nominee. And I just can't take a party seriously that can't determine which one would be a better president, Dan Marino or Courtney Love. Like, how does Dan Marino not at least get two votes? but like, it was interesting. That battle actually was interesting. And this is part of my theory right now that everything's turning up Trump's way. Mm-hmm. The legal cases seem to be going his way right now. Even if he gets a conviction here, I don't think it's going to move the needle. Mm-hmm. And then the Libertarian Convention, look, Libertarians are not going to get a big chunk of the vote here.
Right.
But the two options were Michael Rechtenwald, who's been on our show a bunch of times, professor who kind of got caught up in a woke scandal, more of the right side, right side of the Libertarian Party,
right,
and a guy on the left side of the Libertarian Party, Chase Oliver, who winds up winning. I mean, you found a clip of this guy talking about drag queen story hours that blew my mind.
Yeah, I mean, we give the Libertarian Party all of these chances to be normal. And we're just like, please, for the love of God, we just want a Libertarian Party that's normal. We just want a leader. We just want a head of that party that seems like they're not crap crazy.
Yes,
that crap crazy.
You did very well editing yourself there. Yes.
This is not Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered, and I respect that.
Yes, we're filtered here.
So they try. We're like, please, and this is the best you can do. A candidate who loves drag shows for kids, who is okay with puberty blockers for minors, who is okay with open borders, who is okay with vaccine mandates and mask mandates. What?
Yeah, like, as bizarre as it is to say, the drag queen stuff is actually, from a libertarian perspective, more sane than the vaccine mandate, which makes absolutely no sense when you're talking from a personal rights perspective.
Well, he also, I mean, I saw an old tweet that he wrote that said something to the effect of, I support bodily autonomy. I think that it's your choice whether or not you get something forcibly injected into you. Oh, but by the way, I think businesses should have the right to force you to get vaccinated.
Right.
It's like, wait, what? Either you believe in bodily autonomy or you don't. And by the way, remember, the vaccine mandate argument or against that argument, that's the only time that bodily autonomy is an actual argument, right?
Right.
It is actually your body.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the argument to be made when you're talking about bodily autonomy. Instead, this guy just completely contradicts himself. And by the way, contradicts what I believe to be the libertarian standpoint on a lot of these issues.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, again, like the chances of the libertarian candidate making the difference in this race is low, but it could have been 30,000 votes coming from Donald Trump, and it might now be 30,000 votes coming from Joe Biden. And all these third party candidates seem to be pulling a little bit more from Joe Biden than Donald Trump. Things seem to be going his way. I mean, should we be optimistic? Are you optimistic about the trial outcome?
I am. Well, the outcome... Honestly, I'm going to go ahead and say, when I see CNN, when I see MSNBC, when I see these mainstream media outlets who would love nothing more than to drag Donald Trump every single day of the trial, when I see even them coming out and saying how bad this case sucks, how bad their star witness is, how terrible Michael Cohen was as a witness. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are seeing coverage from them that is negative towards the prosecution. I have to believe that there is at least one or two jurors within that jury pool that is sane enough to have the same stance as the crazy people on CNN and MSNBC and go, yeah, this isn't right.
Right.
This doesn't feel right. I can't allow this.
Because, I mean, look, as much as we talk about a Manhattan jury, even if they were all from Manhattan, which they're not all from Manhattan, but even if they were, about, I think it's 13% of the vote went for Donald Trump in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. If you close your eyes and you pick 12 people, one or two of them would likely be someone who voted for Donald Trump. Donald Trump had some control, and his attorneys had some control about who was let in. I mean, it's certainly got to be possible that one or two of these people are just sane, not even Trump supporters, but just sane.
And that's what I want to drill home. I'm not saying that they're going to go out and vote for him in November.
Right.
I'm not saying that they love him. I'm just saying that they look at this and they go, okay, I don't like the guy, but we can't have the judicial system weaponized against someone who clearly did not do what you're saying he did.
Right. Does it frustrate you that a lot of this effort from the DOJ and all these cases that are going on, not to mention the efforts to throw him off the ballot and, all these things, is like taking the power away from a very different but much more important jury, which is the one of the American people that is coming. We're all coming together in November and we're all a jury and we can all make this decision on whether you see these things that are they offensive to you? Maybe they are. Maybe you don't want to vote for Donald Trump because of them. But like they're trying to take that power away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, the most offensive thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's reprehensible, especially from the people who claim that they care so much about democracy. We love democracy. He's a threat to democracy. I would say preventing us from being able to cast the ballot for the man of our choice is a little bit of a threat to democracy. If, of course, we were a democracy, which we're not.
Which we're not, yes.
They clearly don't care at all about democracy or fairness or justice or anything. And by the way, clearly they're scared of the results in November. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing all of this.
They're terrified. They're running ads in New York State. And that's not the sign of a campaign who thinks they're winning.
No.
Now, can I read you and correctly talk about the fact that perhaps you were not won over by Robert De Niro this morning in the press conference?
You know what? I thought about it for a second, I decided to.
How long was the second? Was it a full second?
No, it was like a millisecond.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. You actually were doing some great work this weekend. You were down, was it the GOP Texas convention?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, in San Antonio.
You're working down there. You're covering it. You're doing some stuff down there. You were, I guess, a delegate as well.
Yes.
So you got a lot of stuff going on. Busy weekend. But you made time one of our two senators here from the state of Texas, John Cornyn, and decided to ask him just a couple of questions. Let's watch.
We are ashamed that you are our senator in Texas.
Hi, Senator Sarah Gonzalez. Hi. I was just wondering why you keep voting to send our money to Ukraine.
Hi. Well, I think it's for our national security interest to help them defend themselves.
I may not get it in here.
Americans are starving right now, and you guys are sending our tax money to Ukraine. We have our own problems to deal with.
You want a World War III? Or
I'll grab you over here. Pardon me. Sorry.
Hey, why did you call Ken Paxton a criminal? Senator, why did you call Ken Paxton a criminal?
Basketball thing over here.
I mean, amazing. So we,
can't
you
answer?
Know, you...
Nothing to say.
Dutifully keep following him and trying to get him to say something of value, which is tough. Other than, hey, what do you want? World War III is kind of all he could come up with. What I think is fascinating about Cornyn is, I mean, he's bad. He's a bad senator.
Terrible.
If he was from Massachusetts,
yeah,
I could get over it, right? Like, I can get over Susan Collins. People complain about Susan Collins, but like, all right, whatever. She's from Maine.
At least there's a Republican in that spot. Right.
This is Texas.
Yes.
This is Texas. We can do so much better. We have done. With Cruz, much, much better. Why does John Cornyn have a job?
It's a great question. I think because for so long, the voters were not paying attention and we don't have the right people running against John Cornyn. I am, however, highly confident that the next time it rolls around, that he is up for re-election, that we will find someone who is worth a darn, who can really put him to the test and hopefully just defeat him, because he is the worst.
The worst.
And by the way, I don't know what he thought was going to happen when he walked on the floor of the exhibit hall at the Texas GOP convention, because all those people hate him. They all hate him. He went into people's caucuses and they booed him. They booed him.
He's one of the two or three most powerful Republicans in the state. Mm-hmm. It's the GOP convention. It should be at least 75-25 in his favor.
it was not. No.
Not even close.
No, and I had so many people who were so happy that I did what I did because they all hate him.
Yeah. I just don't understand it. It's like, this is the central thing, I think. Conservative, when it comes to politics, conservative activists should be thinking about this thing, which is when you have a bright red state with a crap heap of a senator. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Lindsey Graham in this conversation. Yeah. Mitt Romney, certainly. There's a few of them that are up this year. Romney was one of them. Thankfully, he's not going to be back.
Yeah.
But, like, solve that.
Right.
You don't worry about Susan Collins. Don't worry about Delaware. Don't worry about these places that you're never going to get a real conservative in, or at least not for a long time. Go after these bright red states. Whoever wins that primary is going to win the election. Why not have a good Republican in there instead of a crappy one?
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I mean, and again, I think that's what Texans' eyes are being woken up to. I do think that the Paxton impeachment was very helpful in that regard, because Texans are now paying attention to all of the rhinos that are against who is fighting for the grassroots. And when we see someone like Ken Paxton fighting for the grassroots, and we see all of the people who are out to get him, that tells us where their hearts really are. And so I'm confident that Texans have now woken up and gone, you know what? We are Texas, and we deserve someone way better to represent us than John freaking Cornyn.
Mm. There's been some talk of Paxton as potential AG nationally. Trump has kind of even alluded to this as a possibility. Mm. Do you buy the hype? Do you think this could happen?
Yes. And I think if it did, it would be one of the best things for our country that could ever happen.
Because he's at the, you know, there's the FU money. Uh-huh. That's where Paxton is his head. He's had so much crap happen with him. He's just like, screw this. I'm just going to do whatever I think is right. And
exactly.
I don't care what happens.
And burn the whole place down. And you know what? If it burns, it burns. We'll build up from the ashes.
If nothing else, we'll get great content out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That I can guarantee. He'll be great. He would be great in that role. I hope that does happen. That would be fascinating to watch. Let me give you one more. Chuck Schumer, Senator of New York, of course, was talking. He was doing a speech about abortion. And of course, he was saying how the overturn of Roe versus Wade was this terrible thing, and it affected all these millions of women. One third of American women lost access to abortions.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah, I mean, lost access to killing their children. So it's terrible. But then
he mentioned
this also affects the LGBTQ community, and specifically affects trans people the most disproportionately. And I thought to myself, like, actually, wouldn't the L's and the G's specifically have a lot less use for abortion? I think that's how this works. But also, why do trans people, or why are they hit more with abortion restrictions than women?
I'm trying to make
Do you have any idea?
I mean, speaking as a biological woman.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, I'm not a biologist.
No.
But I do believe that I can call myself a real woman.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
quite
a statement.
I can't imagine why a trans person would be disproportionately affected by
I get the sense that they just have these things they tag on, like, you know, the minimum wage, it affects LGBTQ. They just automatically attach it to whatever they're saying.
Have you ever played Mad Libs?
Yes.
This is Mad Libs.
Okay.
They're just
so
like, they have the buzzwords to just fill in the blank.
Like,
and
special
they have,
interest group.
Yes.
And it's like, LGBTQ specifically trans? Okay.
Yes.
And then they just go out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's no argument to be made that trans people are more affected by abortion restriction. I mean, I don't think.
I need a flow chart, I feel like, oftentimes in these conversations. I need a flow chart to make sure I understand, like, what is what. But no, especially if we're talking about trans women who can't get pregnant. Maybe he's talking about trans men.
Men who could get pregnant. Because they're actually women. Right,
but they're not disproportionately
right. They would be
affected.
More. Could you think if you're? I mean, it's possible, but like, so I guess the situation here would be you are a woman. You convert to a man, but then you say you're a straight man.
And then you have
no. You're saying you're a gay man because you're having sex with a man.
With a man.
So the man impregnates the trans man who is really a woman.
Right. So you're just having a heterosexual relationship with too many added on.
Right. But I just feel like that's a low percentage, even of trans people. Right. I don't know. I could be wrong. All right, Sarah Gonzalez. Be sure to catch her right here on Blaze TV. Sarah Gonzalez, Unfiltered. Great show. Don't miss it. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mild würzig, je 150 Gramm Packung, nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken, mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
War is hell. It's not fun. You should try to avoid them when you can. And you know, when people come over and murder and rape all your people, it's difficult to avoid. And that's what the situation is in Israel. No one is left. Palestinians describe deadly tent camp strike as Israel pushes deeper into Rafah, despite global outrage. The attack was actually targeting some Hamas people, leadership. It did seem to take out a couple of Hamas leaders, but also started a really terrible fire in a nearby tent encampment. And that is what Benjamin Netanyahu is calling a tragic mishap. 45 people are dead, according to, again, I don't know whether what to understand about that number because it comes from Hamas. But generally speaking, that is it was apparently not a good situation. In fact, a lot of people were killed. Of course, this does happen in war. It is a terrible, terrible thing. It's one of the reasons you try not to have them. You know, it's one of the reasons why you try to stop people from coming across your border and murdering and raping your people. You know, because once that happens, kind of war is inevitable. And it would be for any sane nation. But Israel is supposed to act insane and not go after the people who are responsible for those attacks. So when these things happen, which they have happened in a couple of circumstances, people get more and more outraged at Israel. And I do wonder if they're going to have the spine to be able to kind of continue and finish this out. But they are, as of this point, they are. White House, of course, is coming after them. You know, Biden's been absolutely psychopathic when it comes to the schizophrenic nature of his approach to Israel. Sometimes he says things I think are pretty appropriate. It is not a genocide. This is not what they're doing there. And then the next day he flips up and, you know, tries to take weapons away from them. But he is assessing if Israel violated a red line with the Rafah strike. Look, if they did it intentionally, it would be horrible. Obviously, there's no reason to believe that they did. Again, no, Hamas is not going in and checking on citizens when they fire missiles. In fact, they targeted them specifically in these attacks. Of October 7th. What Israel does is they try to hit Hamas people. If they do miss sometimes, they do an investigation. They have an outcome. We've seen this happen before where they have said they did things that, that were tragic mistakes and they tried to correct them. If you're committing a genocide, there's no mistake to correct. You just cheer on all the civilians being murdered. That is not what they're doing. Of course, Rashida Tlaib is saying that is what they're doing. She's calling Biden an enabler of genocide at a conference, which, by the way, linked to a terrorist group, according to Fox News. Here is Rashida Tlaib. There's a lot of bad Congress people, but she's probably one of the very, very worst. Here she is blabbing about Israel.
The International Court of Justice just ruled that the Israeli government must stop its invasion of Rafah. But President Biden says what's happening in Gaza is not a genocide.
Yeah.
Where's your red line, President Biden? You all, every single bullet every single gun, every single weapon, bombs that we send is a sacrifice of our own schools here at home. Many of which, when I go into the schools, have garbage bags over their drinking fountains because they don't have clean water. President Biden, I hope you hear us loud and clear. Attacking the authority of the International Criminal Court and interfering in the legal process is nothing more than an attempt to prevent the genocidal maniac Netanyahu and his senior Israeli officials from being held accountable.
I've had enough of her
crimes.
Beautiful speaking voice, by the way, just let me tell you that. Really appreciated the kind of Christmas red and green theme. That was really, really nice that they had there. By the way, the International Criminal Court has no authority over us or Israel. We don't even participate in it. So they're just a giant zilch. It's like as if someone put up a sign with an index card on your local apartment bulletin board saying that you were under arrest. It has the same amount of authority, which is none. And by the way, if you want clean drinking water, one step to get it is to not put garbage bags over the fountains. If you put a garbage bag over the fountain, it's almost definitely not going to be clean. So that's just a quick piece of advice to all those in question looking for clean drinking water across the world. Don't put garbage cans or garbage bags over the spouts. Four quick stories to get to here, and I only got a couple minutes to do it. Joe Biden made a surprise nighttime visit to Hunter's ex, Hallie Biden, days before she testifies in first son's gun trial. Now, they said, no, it's not that. It wasn't about that. It was because we're approaching the 9th anniversary of Beau's passing, which is totally believable. Here, I don't have any information on this. This is my speculation, but there is 100% chance the reason he visited her was to try to get her to not say anything bad about Hunter Biden in the trial that would affect his candidacy. I rate it at 100%. Nothing to do with an almost 9-year anniversary. That's not what that was about. That was about, honestly, intimidating her, probably. But we will see. Maybe she's playing along. We don't know yet. James Biden, by the way, his associate Keaton Langston pled guilty to $51 million in Medicare fraud. One of the things we've talked about before is Hunter Biden gets all the splash. He's the guy with the prostitutes and the cocaine and the art scandals and whatever else. It's Jim Biden has maybe more corruption than Hunter. It's just the boring kind, a bunch of money, real estate transactions, things like that. But Jim Biden, you want to talk about a family member that's incredibly corrupt and maybe more central to the actual business dealings. It might be Jim Biden. Police officers attacked on January 6th are going to campaign for Joe Biden. They did that this morning, and they were there with Robert De Niro at that ridiculous press conference. Harry Dunn was there. The guy who was a proven liar under oath from reporting by Steve Baker right here on this very network. You've seen the videos. I mean, he said he was in one place having a confrontation with January 6th protesters. He was actually in a completely different place. We have him on camera in the other place at the time he said. Still out there campaigning as if he's this big hero in this case. Amazingly, all of this, what does it lead to? Donald Trump's polling lead over Joe Biden is growing. According to election forecasters, 270 to win. Trump is leading the election polls on average by just under 2 points. As I mentioned, this is not a large lead. This is a lead he can lose, but it is a lead he currently has. And considering this is now, what, the 9th, 10th year Donald Trump has been running for president in the last decade, every year, basically since 2015, the fact that he's at the best position in his polling that he's been in that entire time is pretty significant.